Kaya, Wonju, hello, welcome to another episode of The Curb. I'm Andrew F. Pierce, and this is the podcast where I bring you in-depth interviews with filmmakers, creatives, and curators of culture. This podcast is recorded in Boorloo, Western Australia, sovereignty never ceded. I want you to take a moment to think about the last time you saw in a film a man write another man a song as an act of affection. I sat with this idea, this question, for a while, and on an Australian film front, I've come up short with any examples of films that feature men acting in a tender, nurturing way with their male partner. Sweetness, affection, adoration, yearning. These feelings and emotions are ones that are often tied to hetero romances, and certainly are feelings that are yet to find space to flourish in the realm of Australian cinema. And if we take a moment to think about Australian queer cinema, then we're presented with a catalogue of films that skew towards the tragic or dramatic. These are often queer coming-of-age stories, tales of trying to grapple with one's own sense of identity and self, or stories that are skewed with exploration of the impact of homophobia or hate. This is not a slight in their quality, but rather an invitation to reflect on how queer stories are told on screen. And, of course, as you probably understand from my accent, from an Australian perspective. I understand that there are stories outside of Australia that do this, but I'm keenly looking at how we deal with it on screen in Australia. And it's a question that I further asked myself when I watched Andy Johnson's lovely and tender short film, Coming and Going, a tale of two strangers who become lovers, Harry, played by Michael Nicot, and Julian, played by Eli Swindles, who they agree to be boyfriends for a week before Harry has to head on home. It's a narrative that's crafted with a grounded, lived-in perspective, with Andy Johnson pulling from his own relationship experience with a man he met in Canada. To quote from Andy's director's statement, Coming and Going is a film about hope. It is a celebration of the intimacy, sensuality, and connection present in the queer male experience. This is me now. It's that celebration that then gives Michael Nicot and Eli Swindles the space to explore their own queer identities, while also growing as a couple on screen in a manner that acts as if we're peering into the private lives of two strangers, loving and living with each other for a brief time as they have. Andy lets their relationship exist in time in a way that shows its impact. There's a tinge of past lives here, or even a glimpse of Before Sunrise too, but those stories are hetero stories, and outside of Andrew Haig's Weekend, I don't feel that I've seen these kinds of tales told about gay relationships all that often. And again, especially from an Australian perspective. Part of why Coming and Going feels like a quiet revolution of a film is the manner that Andy presents vulnerability, loneliness, and tenderness on screen. Baby, you're going to miss that plane, is what Julie Delpy says to Ethan Hawke as she dances at the climax of Before Sunset, creating one of cinema's finest romantic moments. Andy pulls from the echo of that scene, creating the pivotal moment within Coming and Going, with the scene that has Harry taking a guitar off the wall and playing a song for Julian, gifting his momentary boyfriend lyrics and a tune that will exist only in that moment and only for him. Moments. They're what memories are made out of, the anchor points in time which we stare endlessly at as we walk backwards into the future, its impact having forever changed how we form new memories in our present. And it's the memory of his time with his brief Canadian boyfriend, Anthony Filangieri, that has given Andy the space to explore vulnerability and tenderness in such an intimate and personal way, as he does with Coming and Going. To quote again from Andy's director's statement, when we feel love, we're simultaneously gripped by the inevitability of losing it. And with Coming and Going, Andy gives space for the memory of his connection to Anthony to exist. And like all memories, it's both familiar, yet different from the reality that it was birthed from. All of this, and much more, is explored in the following open and generous conversation with Andy, recorded ahead of Coming and Going's world premiere at the Inside Out Festival in Toronto. Andy and I talk through the notion of masculinity on screen, particularly the distinctly Australian aversion to openness, tenderness, and vulnerability. We talk through the way that Andy creates an open space for Michael Nicot, Eli Swindles, and fellow actor Charles Purcell to be the proudly queer men they are on screen. I couldn't help but ask as well about the importance of Andy's singular diversity hire, one cis white straight fella on set, with the rest of the cast and crew all identifying as LGBTIQA+, with all the film's heads of departments as well being either female identifying or trans non-binary creatives. I also talk about what it was like to write a script with his brief Canadian boyfriend Anthony too. This is a beautiful conversation, one that's fueled with tenderness, love for the craft, and love for love. I'm grateful for Andy's time with this discussion, and I look forward to seeing his creative positivity flourish throughout his filmmaking career. Coming and going screens in the I Know Who You Did Last Summer shorts package on 29th of May 2025 at the Inside Out Festival in Canada. A link is in the show notes for those eager to attend. But for those who aren't able to attend, then I encourage you to follow Andy's Instagram and his production company, Dandy Films, which we also talk about in the following interview, on Instagram. Again, I'll link those in the show notes. There, on those two pages, you'll be able to see future screening details. Right, on to me and The Curb. If you want to find out more about what we do on The Curb, then please visit thecurb.com.au or follow us on Instagram, Facebook, and Blue Sky at thecurbau. Links are all in the show notes. We're a completely independent ad-free website that lives on support of listeners and readers just like yourself. So if you can, and you have the means to, please visit patreon.com/thecurbau, where you can support our work from as little as $1 a month. If you are unable to financially support us, that's okay. Cost of living crisis, I get it. Please also then consider sharing this interview with your film-loving friends. And as well, if you could head over and rate and review us on the podcast player of your choice. Every review helps amplify the interviews and stories from filmmakers to a wider audience. I really appreciate it. Thank you so much for listening to these interviews that we do. I'm really grateful as well to filmmakers like Andy who reach out and say, would you be able to give space to my story? And I'm grateful that they have the openness and ability and feel safe to be able to explore their stories with me. I don't take this for granted. I'm very lucky and privileged to be able to do this. And I'm very lucky and privileged to be able to share with you this story with Andy Johnston. So, enough of the intro from me. Here is the trailer for Coming and Going. Please enjoy this conversation with Andy Johnston.
I'm Julian.
Harry.
Cheers.
Cheers. So you like want to be my boyfriend for the week?
Yeah, okay, why not?
I'm not really the boyfriend type.
That's why it's perfect. You only have to commit to a week.
Can't really say yes unless I know if you're a good kisser or not.
Okay. Actually, I'm the best.
The best? Okay, so on Sunday we would break up.
On Sunday we break up.
Thank you so much for reaching out and for sharing your film as well. It's beautiful.
Thank you. I mean, thank you for being interested. It's really exciting to be able to talk to you.
I loved it. I just thought it was a lovely, beautiful experience of getting to see this lovely queer story, which we don't usually get to see stories that are removed from drama. Like, queer stories often are so distinctly, there's got to be something dramatic occurring, yeah. Right? But this is just about two people spending time with one another.
Yeah, yeah. That was really the main kind of motivation behind wanting to tell this story in particular. I love those type of stories and I long for them as an audience member, and so I was searching for a story like this to tell, but wasn't expecting this to be the story, if that makes sense. So, but it is very important, and it was always important for me for this to just be about two men being intimate with each other and it being very quiet and very simple and just experiencing the emotional roller coaster of what it is to, for us as queer men, to like hook up, or what these transitory connections, what they could hold if we allow ourselves to like be vulnerable to being seen by another person. I'm glad that you picked up on that. That's really lovely.
Let's delve into the history then of it, because it's based on a true story. about your co-writer and yourself. So there is that added level of vulnerability, right? Of sitting down and talking with one another and going, how do we plot out this narrative on a script level? Can you talk about that foundation aspect?
Sure. Yeah. So we met, Anthony and I met in Toronto when I was there for Inside Out Festival last year. And I was there representing a film that I produced at film school. So it was great for me to be there and to have that experience, but I kind of, you know, in some ways it wasn't my film that I helped facilitate it, but as a producer, you have a sort of a different relationship, particularly from a film school perspective. But anyway, that aside, that's kind of why I was there and we met kind of on my first day and just had this instant deep connection straight away. And I'm a very kind of romantic, spontaneous person. So I was like, this is fantastic. And we kind of playfully agreed on this contract of like being boyfriends for a week. And as the sort of the week went on, I became very aware of how I was feeling. And I was sort of like, oh shit. Like if I keep falling into this, I'm going to fall out just as hard at the end. And I started to sort of like process the situation as I normally do as a writer, like through story. And I just felt like what was happening to me was so cinematic and so, but also like so general and normal, and it happens to everybody, that I was like, I think there's a story here. And so I sort of brought it up with Anthony. I was like, I think that I want to write a film about this. Would that be okay? Like, can I have your permission to tell this story? And he was really excited by it and offered to tell and wanted to write it with me, which was unexpected, but really fantastic. And so we spent like the last half of probably the last couple of days, like reflecting on our time together and working out, okay, so how are we going to elevate our story into something fictional? So it's just not like us on a page, like what's this story about and who are these characters and what elements of us are we drawing into them, and then how are we coloring them in other ways to make them their own people? And then we sort of just went through and like plotted, okay, so day one this happened and this happened, and then I kind of think that the emotional arc of what happened to us is the autobiographical section of the film, and then everything else on top is sort of fictional. So it was nice to have that moment of reflection, because you really would never get that with someone that you meet randomly in a country on the other side of the world, sort of like high and by, and you never see them again. But we ended up having many Zooms while I was back in Australia, and we would write and swap notes, and then I just sort of like kept with the momentum because it was very fast. We wrote a script in like a week, maybe 2 weeks, first draft, and then it just sort of like snowballed from there, and within 6 months the film was made and picture locked. It was crazy.
But that emotional vulnerability of reflecting on the relationship, and I know like this kind of story has been told before, but it's often skewed towards like a genre style, like we have to be comedic because we can't take this kind of relationship seriously. But that is the foundation of the conversation of like going, let's be boyfriends for a week. Right. Mm. And having that kind of maturity of going, we know that there's a finite life cycle for this relationship. How do we deal with that as being adults in a really serious, grand up way? I'm not saying that the film is super serious, like so serious and, you know, stern, but it's that acknowledgement of emotions, of saying, let's have something for a short period of time and acknowledge that at the end of the week, Sunday, it's gone. That's quite powerful, and it's beautiful, right? It also is transitory in a way that is just like, you know, these fleeting relationships, and they hold so much value.
They really do, and I personally can think back to, you know, many times I've had a situation like this where a lover has come into my life, and they've said something to me that's changed the way I think, or they've told me a story that makes me change my perspective on a certain topic, or, you know, I think these type of connections can really change us if we are open to that happening. I think a lot of times these connections are are kind of colored with sex, and they're sexualized, which I think there's this longing for emotional connection, but we go about it via physical connection and we miss that thing that we are looking for. And so I think, I mean, I just speaking from my own experiences, that that's why I often think that those type of situations, you leave them feeling empty or unsatisfied, because what you're really looking for is an emotional connection, because we are so lonely. Like, loneliness is a real thing that happens. And I think it's particularly to men, because we don't often talk about our feelings. And I feel like in cinema, queer characters, particularly in Australian cinema, queer men, like, I can't think about the last time that I saw this type of adult conversation, exploration of relationship happen between two queer men on screen. It's as you said, it's normally skewed towards a real kind of known experience, like coming out or coming of age, or it's at the other end of the spectrum where it's about, the tragedy of losing a loved one, or elderly men. And it's sort of like, but what happens in the middle? What happens just in the day-to-day life when you meet somebody and they change you significantly, and then they leave, and then you're just quietly left to deal with it? Like, that happens to me all the time. Not to sound like a weird romantic person who's constantly dating, but I just feel like I'm constantly processing and reflecting on how people change me, particularly my lovers. And so it was, yeah, it was important for me to share that, because I, as an audience member, I long for that type of representation of this kind of, I guess, adult experience. Like, what happens after you come out and before you die? It sounds like there's this big gap in the middle where we become these like comic relief characters, or I don't know. It's just not taken seriously. But I, as you said, this isn't a very serious film. It's just honest.
Honesty is it, right? And we use the word serious to think of like Holocaust dramas and stuff like that, right? But it's bringing the attention to the level of respect, of seriousness, of the drama, of the weight of the relationship, right? And you're right. I've seen so many queer stories told in Australian cinema, but so rarely they're about, you're saying it's the coming out and then it's the dying, but the stuff that's in between is life, right? And we don't see that,
Yeah, we know. And I think particularly for me, it was really important that it was set in Australia and it was an Australian story, because I really struggle to find that here in Australian cinema, even on television. Like, it's just so rare, but the audiences here need it. And so we turn to, we go to film festivals, but there's international films that come through, and they're great films, great stories, but that's not our experience and our culture up there on the screen. And I think that's really important for audiences to see themselves reflected as authentically as possible, so that they too can almost receive some sort of permission to behave in that way, or to grow, or to change. Because we look to media and to screen stories to like understand ourselves, to then be able to put that in practice in our lives. I mean, that's how I engage with media and cinema. That's why I love it so much and feel a slight responsibility to like contribute things that are meaningful and entertaining.
I think that's a beautiful thing as well. Like I talked with somebody who made the director of Sophie, who made Fuens, which is shot in Melbourne, and it's the same kind of mindset she had, where it's like, this is my life, and surely somebody else might relate to it, right? But I guess coming back to queer characters in a way, not just in Australian cinema, but in international cinema, they're often in the periphery, right? And they are the supporting characters to hetero characters. And it's like, okay, fine, but what about, centering their stories? What about putting the spotlight on them? And again, it comes back to, the queer stories that I've seen are about coming out, or the drama or the tragedy of being queer. And you're centering that story again in a way which is saying, this is real life. This is what I live with. And surely other people are doing it as well. Can you talk about bringing queer stories out of the periphery and into the spotlight for you?
Sure. Yeah, I mean, I guess the way that I approach it is, I mean, not all the stories that I write or that I am writing are like this one, where there are queer characters at the center and it's about a queer relationship and it's about romance and sexuality, and like it's actually like not what I really am interested in, but it was just the story that arrived to me, and the you know it was just this massive spark of inspiration, and I just followed it, and the film sort of was born. But I generally am really fascinated and interested in the human experience, and particularly the male, like the internal landscape of men and the emotionality and male relationships and masculinity and its relationship to femininity and how that plays out in a person. And I think there's really a very interesting thing that happens with Australian men with our culture that places a pressure on top of those subjects. And I'm really fascinated by that tension. And I just look at that through a queer lens. And that's kind of how I feel like I approach stories, is that no matter how I look at them, they are subverted and they're interrogated in a way where I look at the world, I guess, differently, or I'm interested in something in the deeper underbelly of what we would normally just put a camera on. I'm like, let's flip it and look at that little real ugly niggly thing that we all don't want to talk about. Like, what's that? I want to interrogate that. And so I guess for me, my approach is sort of through the human experience, but through a queer lens rather than the other way around. Because I think, and what I tried to do with Coming and Going is separate this idea of sexuality and gender, because I feel like gay men are fused together with this title of gay man, but we're men and we're also gay. And we battle the two things separately. And I was really interested in sort of like pulling them apart and investigating, what if two men engage in a relationship that is emotional and vulnerable and, you know, is led by like feminine qualities, like in Australia, you know, there's things that I don't often see, and but that's what I long to see, because that's how I long to live my life, is to sort of like have that freedom to be emotional and vulnerable and romantic and all of these things.
It is something that I'm fascinated by, right? In this notion of male vulnerability in an Australian context, because we've had a lot of stories about the male psyche lately and men's mental health and stuff like that. And I think of films like The Rooster, for example, which is a beautiful film, but it's so often tinged with anger or yelling or just kind of forms of aggression, which aren't always tied to being angry, but they are loud, expressive stuff. And as you're saying, like exploring the feminine quality is a beautiful thing. I cannot recall the last time or any time that I've seen a man write a song for another man, right? You know, and that's a gift. That's a beautiful gift. Yeah, so that sense of vulnerability from an Australian perspective is very welcome.
And that's nice to hear. I think so too, and it's something that I want to contribute, and something that I want to kind of cultivate more in other stories that I'm writing. But like, I think just going back to your point about sort of like international stories and queer characters in general, I think that I am noticing a shift. Like, I'm really, but I mean, I spend a lot of time at film festivals kind of watching international, like indie films from all around the world. And I think it is the indie cinema and queer indie cinema that is really driving this change and this necessary change, and sort of bringing interesting queer stories forward. But they're pioneering that themselves, because nobody is willing to, like, nobody, I'm meaning like the studio system, or no one's willing to sort of like back these stories because they won't make money, or, you know, I'm doing that in inverted commas for listening. So it's sort of like, which is, you know, on one hand it's disappointing, but it's also, I think, kind of fantastic that we're doing it our own way, and we are maintaining creative freedom, and the leadership behind the stories is, you know, led predominantly by the makers and the queer people, and so that's an authentic telling of the story. Like I just watched Crossing finally the other day, and like that's just such a beautiful film, such a queer film. But you know, the protagonist is an old woman, and it's just like it doesn't always have to be a queer person right front and center. But and I think this is a really exciting moment, is where we can start to tell queer stories that open up the possibilities of what that means. It's not always just like a protagonist has to tell someone that they're gay, and then they go through the trouble of it, and then they finally discover that they're happy at the end, and then, or they get some sort of terrible illness and they die. Or it's just like, can we have more than just the two options, please? Because life is that, you know, that humanity is so extremely broad, and experiences, you know, people have all sorts of experiences, and everybody has a story, and I think they're worthy of being told. It's sort of like, I think that, yeah, going back to that, I think like the queer indie cinema kind of community around the world is doing a fantastic job of like really pioneering that and not compromising on the potency of our stories.
I find it interesting. I don't know if you followed like the production of Bros when that came out, and there was the
Oh, I
right.
didn't.
So the mostly about the publicity for it. So it was a big Hollywood production. I enjoyed it. It was a wonderful comedy kind of thing. But the whole notion of it was that it's the first major Hollywood production where all of the cast and crew were from the LGBTIQA community, which is important. Right, but then it's like as you're talking about, like on the independent scene, well, that's already been happening for years. So why is it big news for that? But I mentioned it as kind of like a bridge to being able to talk about the token cis white straight fella, which you've got on the cast and crew here, which is beautiful. I love when the way that you mention that. But it's, you know, again, giving everybody from the director all the way down to, you know, behind the scenes, other behind the scenes talent from the community, the experience to be able to work on a film and to be able to tell a story from their perspective. What does that mean for you to be able to use that and to put that kind of experience on screen?
It means everything to me. It really goes hand in hand with like the other reason why I tell stories and why I'm a filmmaker and why I love making films, is I love collaborating and making with my community and with different people, and providing opportunities for people to learn and upskill and connect. And I think a film set is such a wonderful place for that, if that workspace and that experience is facilitated in a safe and accessible and inclusive way. It can be extremely beneficial for the people there. And as like a producer and a leader in this space, that's something that I'm always switched on about and hyper focused on. And when I had a meeting with my producer, Rachel, and this is the first film that I haven't produced, so that was an interesting experience, just as a side note, like working with a producer, but under my company of Dandy Films. And so sort of like communicating what the standards are and what we stand for as Dandy Films, and communicating that to a producer to then take on and, you know, lead that. But Rachel's fantastic, and I can't wait to work with her again, and I think so highly of her. But we did have a conversation about, okay, what is this, what's the culture going to be, and what are the type of people that we want to work with, and how are we going to facilitate this space? And it's really important for me that if I'm not paying somebody, and you know, in this type of work, it's really hard to get enough money to pay everybody what they should be paid. But I do believe that sometimes money isn't the most valuable thing you can give somebody in these type of like indie filmmaking spaces, particularly short films. And for an example of that was, I had an actor reach out to me a couple of projects ago, when I did a call out on Instagram for a production assistant, and he messaged me, and I said, oh, sorry, I've already found someone, but I'll keep you in mind for the next one. And I reached out to him and I said, hey mate, like I'm doing a film, if you're still interested, come on board. And because he's an actor and he wanted to learn about what happens behind the camera, and he was just happy to jump in and do a day's work as a production assistant, just so he could see the operations of what goes on. I mean, I've been an actor as well. And when you're there in front of the camera, you're hyper-focused on doing your job. You're not really understanding how it all comes together. And so having him there, he was able to learn about how the film set runs. And he met a bunch of people, and also he's a deaf person. And so I just had a conversation with him. I was like, so before you come on set, tell me what I can do to make your day on set the most comfortable and accessible. And he sort of communicated his needs, and I just passed it on to Rachel, and we set it all up, and, you know, we're done. And then he came on, he had a great job, he had the best time, and I can't wait to work with him again. Do you know what I mean? It's sort of like, I think for me, it's about the setting the culture and then providing these experiences for people. It's so important to me, because at the end of the day, like, it's just a film. Like, people will forget about it in 5 years, and it's just a short film, so they'll probably forget about it in like 3 months. But like, they'll never forget those moments and the connections that they can make. And that's why I love making movies, is because I can facilitate a workspace and a place of creative expression that is safe, because traditional filmmaking methods are not safe. It's so dangerous, and it's so like, oh, I just don't like it. And I want to disrupt that so bad. And I think that's why I started my own company, is because I wanted to do it in a different way. And again, it's about, I look at it through a queer lens, and I'm thinking about the people involved and how I can best sort of like lift them up and champion them. Yeah, it's not me being like, get over here and tell my story, and I don't give a fuck who you are. Like, it's really special to me, and I'm really proud that this film was majority people from the queer community, and all of our heads of department were, you know, female identifying or trans identifying. And it's just really special to me to be able to just flip the script a bit and show that it's not hard. You just have to put some effort in and have some conversations and like just be a decent person and think about people first rather than product first.
And I do wonder as well, like, it's some of the conversations I've had with cisgender straight people about creating stories, about queer stories, it's almost been driven by this notion that they're afraid to have a conversation, right? Mm. They're afraid to ask the question of, how can I make you feel safe? How can I make this space that we're going to tell the story collectively feel safe for you? And this notion of fear is stifling. Can you talk about breaking that down? You've kind of already touched on it, but that dismantling this notion of fear is really important too.
Totally. And I'm not immune to that. I feel that too. But I just think that, I mean, I think clear is kind. Do you know what I mean? Like, I just, when I'm in this space of being a leader and I have a duty of care to look after everybody and make sure that they are having the best time possible, if they come onto a film set that's my film set, I think, yeah, I hear you. The fear is there. And I think it means that you have to face something about yourself that is uncomfortable, really. It's a conversation you need to have with yourself first before you're able to have it with somebody else. But I think, I don't know. I just, there has to be a shift. You have to switch into moving forward with love and not fear. Any fear-based thinking, scarcity mindsets, all of those things, I think, they make me think corporate, and they make me think money and like profit and, you know, policies and procedures, which are important, but they're not priority for me. I think it's about the person and the people, and therefore moving with love and connecting from a place of like compassion and wanting to understand and connect with the people you're making something with, you're making art with. And I think that's what makes our community so, at times, it's so vibrant and so positive, is that we know what it is to be excluded. And so we have a deeper compassion and a deeper longing to connect with each other. and be kind because we know what we face like out in the world. But really, it's not hard to just be like, hey, what do you need? And how can I provide that for you? Great. Sick. Like, I'll go and I'll see you on the day. Like, it's just not hard, but it's just because the process and the system that is ingrained in particularly filmmaking is so hierarchical and such a strict way of like, you do this and then you do this and then you do this and then everybody in their departments goes and does their thing. It's like breaking and dismantling that hierarchical kind of trickle down of all the departments. That's where I think it gets lost, because if you're working together as a team, which is, you can do in these smaller projects, it's easier to have everybody discussing at once and a dialogue between everybody, rather than being like, okay, you tell your people to tell their people that to tell their people that if they need anything to come to me. And it's just like, the person who needs something doesn't know who you are and is too scared and doesn't want to lose their job by being like, actually, this is not an accessible set for me. I can't work that day because, you know, I'm a wheelchair user and I can't get into the house. It's like, nobody, it's just like, I don't know. It's, for me, I'm like, I'll choose a location that's accessible over one that looks pretty or that's better for toilets or what, I don't know. Like, I will think about, is this location, does it fit the story, but is it accessible for anybody who might be on the crew later on? I don't know. I just think that way.
But it's a beautiful, it's a beautiful way of thinking, right? But I say that knowing that, like, highlighting how beautiful that way of thinking is almost like everybody should be thinking that way, right?
Well, they should. I hope that they don't. That just makes, no, I'm kidding. I do hope that by like leading by example and by having conversations like this, that people are able to stop and think about how they are approaching their project. Because particularly in the film world, there is this pressure of time and money, and that puts everybody into this fear-based scarcity mindset of like, holy shit, we've got no time and no money. So like, I don't have time to talk to you about, I'm so busy and I'm so stressed. And everybody starts there. And it's just like, why choose that? If you've got no money, no time, then they're things that you can have control over. So get more money and get more time and then start making. Like, there's just this thing of like, I'm making a movie, so therefore I'm stressed about money and time. And it's like, that's just a passed down behavior or a belief system of how it should operate. I'm not sure where it comes from, but it's man-made. So it can be un-man-made and changed. Just like reverse engineering of how you want to experience, you want that experience to be for your crew and your cast and the people that are coming on board, like, then build a bespoke experience for those people, for that film, because every film is different. That's how I approach it. It's kind of like a bespoke creative, like, creation of an experience, of a workspace. But I do think that time and money pressure can shift people's not thinking, not connecting. They're being in the, like, that fight or flight thing. They're not, their nervous system is not centered. And I think a leader, particularly as a producer, you have to be centered and grounded and calm and thinking about your people.
I'd love to then kind of swerve into talking about the foundation of Dandy Films then, because that seems like all of what you're saying is like real foundational things. Was there a pivotal point where you said to yourself, I need to create this, I need to build this because of something that's taken place?
So before Dandy Films, I had a production company called Don't Be Down Productions. And that was a production company that, you know, that I connected to my ABN as a freelancer, and I just sort of like gave it a title. So it felt more, I don't know. I think I watched like some interview with somebody, or I won some workshop, and they were like, you know, just call yourself whatever, like, you know, men have like, fake it till you make it. And I was like, great, I'm the founder of Don't Be Down Productions. And I just like, create a business name. And you know, I think you have to sort of like, I have personally always had that kind of thing of like, of just doing the thing, saying that I'm a founder of this or I'm the writer of that, to not allow myself the time or space to doubt myself, so that I do. It's just to sort of the way that I practice self-confidence, I think, is to just like say, this is the thing that I am, and feel the uncomfortable unease of like sitting in that role and the imposter syndrome, and let it all just exist, and then it will eventually like fade away, and then I can just get on with the job. But I'd always had Don't Be Down Productions, and that sort of dabbled in, excuse me, at cabaret and theater, and I wasn't doing film at that time. And just sort of like after COVID, I went back and did my master's of film producing at VCA, and that's really where my passion and love of cinema met my kind of curiosity and interest in producing and facilitating story. And it was during that 18 months of studying that I really had the time, and I was also, you know, forced via essay questions and things to think about my values and what it is that I want to stand for as a producer. And I really sort of had a really wonderful time connecting back to my queerness and queer storytelling, and wanting to like really just stand for that and lead that space, and create safe, enjoyable film sets where people can come to work and have a great time and make movies, and it not be this awful, unsafe experience. Dandy came from, I was listening to this podcast, it was an audiobook about the history of queerness. I can't remember what it was. This fantastic book that sort of like documents LGBTQIA plus community from like the beginnings right up until now. And they were talking about the dandyism and about how that movement was sort of identified by queer people dressing queer or outwardly colorful, particularly men, more effeminate in public, so that they could sort of like see each other and identify with each other in a really public visual way, and to sort of like challenge ideas of gender and of masculinity particularly. And I just felt like that word really like harnessed and stood for so much of what I'm trying to do as a filmmaker. And so that's where sort of the rebrand of Dandy came through. It was like, I want to create a production company that, yes, is just me at the moment and the people that I bring on and off projects, but one day I want it to grow to be, you know, a production company that exclusively makes queer film stories for, by, and with the community, to a place where, you know, we can, my dream is to sort of have international productions, and for it to grow to be like a Blumhouse thing, but for queer stories. Yeah. That's the dream, but it really did come from this sort of like place of study and reflection and self-reflection, and thinking about who I am and what I want to say and what I want to stand for, and sort of dismissing this sort of rhetoric or this kind of idea that I have to tell stories for a general audience, and I have to make stories that are going to be good on, you know, Stan, and like that are going to appeal to everybody. And I'm like, fuck
Yeah.
that. Like, kind of boring. I don't, like, if it's for everyone, it's for no one. You know, I'm telling stories for my people and for my community, and holding space and creating space for people who don't have that privilege and that access. I also want to invite them in and use my access and my knowledge to help lift up their stories and champion them. That's really important to me too. It's not always about my stories. It's about helping other people tell theirs. And that's really something I'm very passionate about as well.
In that regard, then let's talk about your two lead actors who, I mean, I know Eli's work mostly from the 100% Wolf and 200% Wolf, and I had a wonderful chat with him last year, and beautiful performer. And it took me a moment to be like, hang on, is that Eli? Yeah, okay, cool. So it was wonderful to get to see him explore a character this way. But then Michael as well, who's beautiful as well and has such a great screen presence. Can you talk about finding these two great actors and working with them for those characters?
Yeah, I mean, it was a the casting process for this film was a journey. I think we spent the better half of 2 months really trying to find the right people for these characters, for this relationship, because it's all about this relationship. Like they're in every scene. And so the chemistry of those two characters had to be undeniable. And also the character of Harry needed to be able to sing and play guitar. And so there was that kind of, and that eliminated so many people. Do you know what I mean? Instead of like, just that very like simple thing that we thought, this is going to be a great idea. Let's write this guy plays the song. Like it just sort of like cut out so many options for us. But I immediately engaged Rhys Velasquez from Evolution Casting, who I'd worked with before. I think Rhys is an exceptional casting director. I love working with them. They really do bring the director to the role. Like they are thinking outside the box and thinking about really exciting choices and always challenge my ideas of who the character is by going, what about this person? Like, what if this character's like this? And so we saw some amazing tapes, like audition tapes for these two roles. And it made it really hard because everybody did a really fantastic job. Like there wasn't any bad actors. It was sort of just trying to work out the chemistry of the two. And Michael actually auditioned for Julian. And so, but it wasn't quite working. And we all had a conversation about what if like, and I kind of like went and like researched him a bit more and found out that he could sing. And I was like, what if we just like try him for Harry? Like that's, I don't know about this. And Rhys was like, I can ask. And so we'd all worked out and we brought him in to read in a callback for Harry. And it kind of worked because I was originally going to play Harry. And when I decided to step away from that and just direct the film, this role opened up. And so we were trying to fill that. And Eli was another really interesting actor who came across the table, and I met with him for a coffee. And I just knew immediately, like you are this character, like it was just his energy and the way that we were speaking. I could just see him in the role. And so it was, but then, you know, we had to find the right person to match his chemistry. And that was just a whole really interesting process that I've never done before, is chemistry tests with actors. But when, you know, when Michael and Eli were in the room together, everybody that was there just immediately like lent in. And I was like, okay, well, that's good. and you could see them, you could see the chemistry between them and see them play with the scene, and it just sort of like all came alive. And it was nowhere near what I thought the casting was going to be for those two roles. Like, and that's, I'm so grateful for Rhys for taking us on that journey. And then of course, Charles Purcell in the role of Adam was another wonderful find from Rhys. And, you know, that was just a blessing to have him come on for a day and shoot that, you know, those few scenes. And yeah, it was a really enjoyable experience. But I mean, as an actor myself, I felt for everybody. So I was like, I know what this is to, you know, put yourself into the shoes of a character for an audition and then not get it or get it. And so, yeah, it was, I had a really great time casting it, but the final actors in the film are, I think, delivered beyond what I could have expected, and really brought these characters alive and really made them their own. And I wanted actors who wanted to take these characters and develop them and continue to grow them through the process of filming. And I think that happened.
So you're on set,
yeah,
getting to see them play it out, like this story that's so personal to you. What's that like?
It was a lot, and there are times where I was like, why have I done this to myself? What have I done? But it was, I think it was, It taught me a lot about how deeply I needed to understand a story in the future to be able to tell and direct it. So perhaps a story that's not mine that I direct, or another story that I write that's not based off a true experience that I've had, it taught me how deeply I need to know the characters and know what they're feeling, and as if I've lived it. Like, because I felt like I was really able to communicate at such a deep, specific level to the actors and to everybody involved, like, this is how I want it to feel because that's how it felt. But it was hard. There were scenes that were verbatim, like the breakup scene. You know, we didn't sing the song to each other, but there were some things that were said that are in this film that were said. And seeing that play out in front of me while I was still processing was really hard. But the fantastic thing was that Anthony was on the other end of a WhatsApp chat, and we were moving through it together. Like, he was always there as a part of it, and the friendship that we've grown, that has grown out of this making of this film, to the point where we're writing another film together at the moment, which is really exciting. And we will eventually turn Coming and Going into a feature. You know, this wonderful creative collaboration and friendship has moved out of this fleeting experience that we had in Canada. But yeah, at the time it was tough because I was still healing. And but it was a very cathartic experience to be able to make the film and watch it play out. It was weird. Hey, it
I
was
can
so
imagine.
weird.
I can imagine. Yeah.
There were times where I was like, I need a minute. Team, there were tears. Everybody was just like, you know, there was times where I was literally just crying, and I was like, guys, we just need to keep going. Just ignore me. Let's go again.
So, taking it a step further then, watching a relationship that you're intimate with and familiar with and you know inside out playing out in front of you, how does that change your future relationships then? How do you reflect on how you engage with the next guy that you meet or your current partner if you've got one?
Yeah, it's a great question, because I have noticed a change. I think I'll backtrack just quickly and say that the relationship on screen in this film is very different to the one that I had, you know, with Anthony at that time. It's based in a similar kind of emotional experience, but it became its own thing. And I think Eli and Michael took Harry and Julian on their own journey, which is I'm so grateful for, and what is what I wanted to happen. I understand your question, but I just wanted to clarify that it evolved from my own experience. But it has shifted the way that I approach relationships and the way that both romantic and platonic and, you know, professional, I like to think that I'm like moving away from being an anxious attachment style person to being a little bit more secure in just knowing that people come into our lives for some reason. And I just feel like I approach it more calmly now, knowing that I have no control over what that is. All I need to do is to be present with that person and to try and see them and listen and engage and connect with them as truthfully as I have capacity to. And if they're not able to sort of meet me at that level, then I politely just sort of like step away from it, because I know that this is the type of relationship that this is the level of relating that I want to do. And I don't know, it's just made me feel more secure and confident, being like, this is the type of person that I am, and this is how I like to connect with people. I don't like small talk. I want to go deep down. Like, I want to talk about real shit straight away. Like, let's dump all of that stuff and let's connect in person, please. Do you know what I mean? Like, I'm really kind of like moving away from the online space, online dating. I feel like Anthony and I met in person, and it was just sort of like, I don't know, it was great. just made me realize that it's possible to meet people in the world. But unfortunately, that's difficult. And so I don't know. I just approach it with more confidence and more boundaries, I would say. And I don't people please as much anymore. And I guess I'm not as, it brought a little bit more hope into my life of like, who knows what this person could be? And if I feel like I want to talk to them, I feel like I want to connect with them, then I will, because who knows where this connection could go. And I mean, I never thought that meeting Anthony in a bar, that we would be writing films together in a year's time. Do you know what I mean? Like, I would never think that. And I don't write with anybody else because I don't like it, but I like writing with him because we work well together. It's just strange. And life is strange, but I think that's the beauty of the queer experience, and what we have is being able to create and almost design our own relationships and how they are, how they evolve, and the fluidness of connection, I think is really beautiful. And dismantling this idea of friend, lover, you know, why can't they be both or none, or I don't know. It's just, you just said that out loud, but I've really been reflecting on it and been making changes.
Well, I think it comes back to this, like, and words, they carry weight and they carry meaning. And I think that when we talk about, like I mentioned before, the notion of seriousness, right? Or the notion of vulnerability and people's mindset or the image that might pop in their mind about what a serious thing is or a vulnerable thing is vulnerability is tied with crying and tears and sadness. And it's like, it's not that.
it's
this kind of conversation, right? It's being open and saying, this is my boundaries. This is what I don't want to talk about. This is what I do want to talk about. I really want to talk about this. And that kind of stuff, which, again, vulnerability for Australian men, doesn't matter if you're queer, straight, whatever, really hard. Mm. It's really, really hard.
Yes. The other thing I will quickly touch on, which you've just reminded me of, is like speaking to the vulnerability and the intimacy in this film, which is, and the quality, I think the quality of intimacy is something that I was very passionate about, portraying sex and intimacy between two men in a very different way than what is presented to us normally in media. And that is intimacy that is emotional and that is vulnerable and that is connected. And Kiana, our intimacy coordinator, and I, she was the first person I brought onto the project because I knew that the film has a lot of intimacy in it. And I wanted it to evolve and change the characters and push the story forward. But it was important to me that the quality of it was really honest and truthful and like extremely vulnerable, because it is like when you're with somebody and you're about to kiss them for the first time, like that is so electric and so vulnerable and scary. And when, you know, gentle touch and I don't know, there's just sort of, there was so much about that I wanted to change up and shake up the imagery of two men connecting physically with each other. And Kiana really led that so beautifully. And we had so many conversations with us, putting ourselves and the actors and made sure that everybody in the cast, the crew, everybody knew what was going on. And the only people that needed to be in the room were in the room for those sort of, for the simulated sex scenes. And I'm just really proud of that as well, and what that says about how men can connect and how we do connect. That's how I connect. It's like when I look at some movies and I'm like, fellow travelers, I've only seen a few episodes of that, and I'm like, Jesus, that's intense. Like, who's having sex like that all the time? Like, what? You know what I mean? I just wanted to offer something truthful and something else. And something else, it's not this or that, it's just like this also occurs, and it's also okay if your intimacy and sex looks like this, if it's gentle and kind and emotional. And you know, there were some times where like, boys, if you feel like you're gonna cry doing this, then that's okay, because that can happen, and it's okay for two men to engage in this and have tears. That's fine.
But to me as well, it's also the notion of like we talk about the vulnerability and that kind of affection and you know, as if it doesn't occur. But I think what you've done as well is kind of highlight that people might feel that they're not vulnerable, or that they might feel that there's not an openness, mm-hmm. and then they see it on screen and they go, oh, actually, I already do that. I guess I am vulnerable. I guess I am vulnerable in my own way, right?
Yeah.
Because
totally.
It's this structure of what we should be, and this notion of, again, like you talked about, what is on screen and what we read and all this kind of stuff and what we see on Instagram. It's like, well, I should be that, but I'm not. And so getting to present it in a real, genuine way, again, makes you feel comfortable of like, actually, it's going to be okay. It's going to be okay. Yeah.
Totally. Yeah, absolutely. I agree with you entirely. It's just this really trying to just shake up and dump in the bin this idea of like what I should be, or how I should show up, or what people expect of me to look like or say or wear or engage. Like, and I think particularly the gay mainstream, like male community and media can be so prescriptive in how we are supposed to fucking walk on the street. Like everybody listening, I'm doing hand gestures, minimizing. It's just so oppressive and counterintuitive to what our community should be, which is inclusive and allowing space for everybody to just be who they are. But and so I really try and engage with like dismantling that and in any way that I possibly can, showing people and giving people permission to just be themselves and to be human, because that is, you know, that's what this film is about, is like, yes, you can grieve and be in love at the same time. It's possible. We are incredible creatures, and like all of those things exist within us. You don't have to be one or the other or none and express nothing. Like, that's not true and that's not good. it's important to feel, and it's okay to feel different things at different times and to express yourself in different ways than what is communicated to you in media.
Yeah, well, because I mean, I can't remember where I was reading it, but it was they were talking about creating a film, and it was a Hollywood film, and they were talking about it was on the studio, right? Recent episode where they're talking about casting. I don't know if you've been watching The Studio at all.
I watched the first episode, but I haven't gone back to it yet. So I really want to, though.
It's up and down. But there's an episode where they're talking about casting the Kool-Aid Man film and stuff, and there was a really, really pointed line, which I think is really, it's something that's quite representative of more Hollywood films, but it's this notion of, well, they can't have both a black story and it be a queer story as well, because it's two things that basically audiences, they can't hold both of those things in their mind, which is like, well, I don't know if you've seen Society, but black queer people do exist. But it is this singularity of going, an audience can only process one thing, which is such a bizarre concept, right?
It really is. And do you know what annoys me about that is that the people who, and I would be interested to see this episode and see what character says that, but I can tell you it's probably an executive or a suit who is someone making a decision about money.
It's Catherine Hahn's character, the advertising person.
Right, exactly. And the thing that shits me is that these people speak for audience. And I just, that irks me so much. And it's why I really have such a resistance to like entering into the studio system or trying to work with like getting a show on television or anything that involves having to go past a series of people like that who go, yes, I give you permission, or yes, I will open the door to you now, is because they speak for this audience, again, inverted commas, audience. I'm like, you can't speak for everybody, because people are so unique in themselves, and people's viewing habits and the taste for for television and cinema is so unique to them that there, yes, I guess there is data that says, you know, this general demographic will engage in this topic. But I think that audiences are really intelligent. And I mean, I know my own viewing habits. I'll watch like Trixie and Katya on YouTube on my phone when I'm on the treadmill. And then like the other night, I just randomly put King Kong on because I felt like watching that. And then, you know, I watched Dying for Sex on my television here. And it's just like, we're not, you can't put us in a box and tick it or cross it. And that's what frustrates me about this is like these people speak to an audience or a community and say, no, these people can't do that or they won't understand this. It's like, but why don't we try and find out? But then that their issue is money. We can't risk the money. And it's like, how sad, how disappointing and tragic that all of this potential for change and for telling stories that are important or exciting and necessary is coming down to money. Like, just makes me so angry.
Yeah. And it's like, have you even tried doing it a different way? Like, cause it might be successful.
Right. And it often is. It often is. And that's, and I think that's why the indie scene is so exciting because people take those risks because they don't have any money. So it's like, I'm going to lose anyway. You know what I mean? It's like, we literally have nothing to lose. So let's just try. So I think that's why I like engaging with this type of making and with this community is because people are fearless in going, no, this is how I want to do it. And I'm going to do it my way. And I think that's really exciting and inspiring. It's fucking hard and demoralizing and like exhausting and makes you doubt everything you ever thought about yourself and what you're doing. And, you know, there's so many times I'm like, why don't I not just have a little job and just give up all of this fight and this struggle, but it's all worth it. Because if someone like you can watch this film and see something in it that makes you understand yourself a little bit better or feel more calm in your daily life and your experience of who you are, then like, it's all worth it for me, you know? That's what matters to me is that a story that I can facilitate or tell can have some sort of impact, even on that kind of micro level, then I've done my job.
Well, I mean, it's been a really wonderful, rewarding conversation. So honest and I'm grateful for your time and the film and the journey that we've gone on together is really, really quite something. I'm excited to see where you go as a creative. I want to see your influence and it blossom and bloom and see, you know, feel the flowers grow and all these other stories and stuff. That sounds so like literally like, oh my gosh, I'm sorry.
No, it's beautiful. Thank you. I really, that means a lot. Thank you so much. I really appreciate that. I'm about to go. I fly to Canada on Tuesday to the festival for the screening.
Yeah. And, tell me about it. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's the world premiere of Coming and Going, and it's so, you know, it's so special. Like it's going to be playing at TIFF Lightbox in Toronto, which is the cinema where Anthony and I met and connected over watching movies. So it's going to be wild that the two of us are going to be sitting there and Anthony's beautiful boyfriend Tyler will be there as well. And, you know, we're all sitting there like watching this like film that we made. And it's just, I'm really excited about that full circle moment. It's just, it feels really special, but I'm also, you know, embarking on this journey of exploring what Canada holds and whether it's possible to sort of evolve this co-production idea that, you know, we are doing on a very small level, Anthony in Toronto, me in Australia, but I'm very curious to find out whether there are people there who are interested in the stories that we want to tell. And if we can start to build something together that engages some sort of co-production between Canada and Australia, which, you know, that's been done before, but that's something that I'm very excited about exploring. And yeah, I'm going over there in a week and I can't wait to get back into the warmth again because it's getting cold and I'm going to chase the summer.
Well, I'm certain it'll be good. I literally had a conversation with Matthew Rankin this morning. I don't know if you know his films, but Universal Language is a beautiful experience. And we were talking about the relationship between Australian films and Canadian films because they do feel like singular entities, but kind of on the periphery outside of America. Yet there's distinctly stories that are being made from these perspectives. And it was beautiful, you know, and I think co-productions are going to be the way going forward. I think there's going to be a lot more, like, obviously there's already work going on in Australia and this kind of stuff, but the co-production space is going to be exciting over the coming years. So I hope that really works for you because I think it could.
Thank you. Yeah, I think so too, and I hope so too. I've seen it work, and I think that, you know, the foundation that Anthony and I are building works. And in my mind, if I just apply what I've learned in the past and just sort of like progressively just like add to it, in my mind it works. But I've got to go and investigate and see if the experiment is, you know, I've got to go experiment and see if it does actually work. But in my fantasy world, it's great. So I'm just gonna live there.
Good, good. Well, let me know how you go in
I
Canada.
will.
Let me know what
I
the
will.
experience is like. Andy,
Thank
it's been
you.
a delight. Thank you so much for reaching
Oh,
out,
thank you.
and for trusting me with your story. It means a lot.
No, I really appreciate this, and that was a really wonderful conversation. Thank you for really one. I this is the first time I've really had, you know, to talk about the film, and I've had a break from it too. So it's really nice to sort of like reinvestigate how I think and how I feel about it, and to have this conversation. So I'm very grateful for you. Thank you so much.
Thanks for listening to this chat with Andy Johnson about his short film Coming and Going, which is screening at the Inside Out Festival in Canada. For other interviews and reviews, visit thecurb.com.au. Please rate and review and share this interview with your film-loving friends. We hope they like it as much as you have. I'll see you on the next one.